David Reneke. DavidReneke.com is the website, the man himself. We get a chance to catch up with him, and he's with us now. David, hello.
Yeah, good to be with you again, Bilko. Been a while.
It has been a while. We've got through floods and pestilence, and you're okay where you are in New South Wales?
Pretty dry at this stage, yeah. Knock on wood. Everything seems to be okay. It's all happening around us, though, but I'd give a good meat pie for good sky.
Oh. Hey, as we know, the world's really gone to poo in the last 7 days with Russia and Ukraine, and I tell you what, there'll be a few people that have their sights on the moon, imagine. And this great article at davidreneke.com about whoever controls the moon controls the solar system. Is that where we've moved to now? Is this where the world's going to, mate?
Yeah, look, the whole thing is that we've got to worry now about what these partner nations have got in mind, namely China and Russia. They've gone their own way and they've teamed up in more ways than one. Now, the troubles we're having here seem to have escalated into space because the Russians have come out saying in recent weeks that if the sanctions continue to be imposed on their country, they're going to lose control of the space station. It could crash.
Really? Why is that? Are they, they need money to oh, that's right, they need to keep sending food and that up there, don't they?
No, they control the steering of it. That's their component.
Oh, right.
They've got a spacecraft attached to the space station. And they said, look, if you knock us around too much with your sanctions, we might have to curtail our involvement with the space station. That means it's going to drop down into a lower orbit. And they have to move it every two or three times a year, by the way, because it does get down too low. And if it enters the Earth's atmosphere, it'll burn up and then crash. Well, you know, Elon Musk has come to the into the argument too, and he said, no, that's a lot of BS. He said, I can save the day. He's Superman, this bloke.
Yeah.
He said, look, I've got a vehicle we can take up there. He said, I ferry astronauts up to the space station all the time. And he said, you don't need the Soyuz spacecraft. He said, I can dock with it and we can move it. So what I think was going on, the head of the space agency over in Russia there, Roscosmos, I think a bit of chest beating going on, or maybe a little bit of propaganda, I don't know, but no problem with that. But certainly we've got to look at the moon now, because there's Chinese rovers up there at the moment, and we've also got Russia also intending to team up with China to put a space station probably in orbit around the moon.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. If they put a space station up there, who knows if that'll be weaponized? I mean, the ISS was always for peaceful missions. China and Russia get together, this could change the whole landscape now.
Yeah. We're more concerned about when they go to the moon there, because at the moment, we've talked about this before, there's no clear space law in place, currently in place to over ownership of who owns what. And, you know, all the lunar resources up there may very well come down to whoever claims them first, and that can be done because there's no space law. It needs to be put into action now. They're working on it. They've been working on it for about 100 years, probably about 3 or 4 years, but we need to get that completely set because there's nothing stopping Russia or China saying we own the Shackleton Crater or we own, you know, another part of the moon where there's a lot of water, right? And that's exactly where you want to go if you want to put a base there. So what we're talking about here is there needs to be some sort of containment, some sort of legislation, rules and regulations as to who can claim what. Because the moon's a stepping off point between here and Mars, and it's also a focal point of a burgeoning brand new industry called space tourism, as we've talked about. But there's minerals up there. There's a lot of mineralogy up there that we can mine. And this is another issue too. As we've seen here with in our own country with the mining laws and the leases and who owns what and, you know, people taking out ownership rights and left, right and centre. The issue remains now, is this going to happen on the moon? Because not only have you got China, Russia, NASA also involved, you got India, you got Japan as well. And there's a consortium of private space companies out there who are about to get access to the moon, courtesy of people like Elon Musk.
And what's to say those companies, they aren't controlled by the countries they come from? I'm sure Russia's oligarchs will make sure they've got some sort of control with mineral rights on the moon for a start.
Well, that's it. They can, they're going to grubstake an area and say, we own this, and we're claiming it under our law. But there's nothing to stop them doing that. That's what the issue is at the moment. I think if this situation with the Ukraine situation, that if that hadn't really cleared up the way it has, we might have got somewhere with this. because space law is now being put together, but it's got to go through the United Nations. Now, the thing that worries me about this, and we've just seen a example of it, the United Nations aren't very strong.
No, they're toothless paper tiger or whatever?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
But it is true, and even if they do get this space law enacted, there's nothing stopping them from flipping their nose up and saying, well, tough. So what are you going to do about it? I don't know how this is going to play out, but I certainly know that the moon's going to be an issue for a lot of nations very soon because of the mineralogy.
Yeah.
And the advantage of being on there and having a prime spot and saying, I own it. You can't come here.
Yeah, I think the immediate problem is that ISS, and I hope Elon can remedy that situation sooner rather than later, because I think that ISS is reaching its usefulness anyway. It's really almost time for replacement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got probably 10 years in it. That's still a long time. May even be 5. But we've talked about this before. I think, this would be a perfect thing to take to the moon and put in orbit around the moon as a way station, even a storage facility of some sort, even for its curiosity value.
Mm.
Tourists are going to want to see it. I mean, these things should be kept. There's no point dropping it in the ocean, burning it up. What for? It's part of history.
Yeah, well, get it in the Smithsonian. I mean, even if you have a decent replica of it and maybe have a piece that doesn't burn up, I mean, how do you get that back to Earth safely? I mean, it's going to burn up, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll all crumple up. Most of it will burn up. Some of it will hit the ocean there. You can't bring it back. It's too big.
Yeah.
It's about the size of the Melbourne Cricket Ground.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah.
And you could pull it apart bit by bit, but I don't know. No one seems to be interested in doing that. And the same thing with the Hubble Space Telescope. Goodness me. If anything needs to be saved for posterity and for future history, put in a museum, it's the Hubble Telescope. It's single-handedly changed the face of astronomy and everything we know about the world we live in and the world above us.
Yeah. I think they want to just use replicas. I mean, they've got plenty of those around, but again, to bring it back from where it's orbiting, it's too cost prohibitive right now.
No, it's about the size of a Greyhound bus. You can't do it.
Yeah,
you'd need something like the space shuttle to bring it back here.
Yeah.
But we don't have that anymore. So I think it's the What would I do? I'm only an onlooker like you are. I'd say put it into a higher orbit. Take it up there somewhere. Park it somewhere for a future time when it can be brought back here some way. Even pull it apart bit by bit. But anyway, who knows? We just seem to discard too much of our history these days.
It's like the old TV stations never used to keep their old shows back in the 50s because they didn't have any way to store them on videotape. That was, very expensive. But you need to have some way of recording it, even if you film it or make some sort of 3D holographic image of it or something, David.
Yeah, well, the same thing happened with the Wright Brothers plane. Nothing was done there. All we've got are bits and pieces of it. It's been reconstructed, with mainly new material. And did you know that Neil Armstrong took a piece of the Wright Brothers plane to the moon?
Did he? Okay.
A little piece of the propeller, the original propeller. Because that plane crashed, remember?
Mm.
The Wright Brothers, a lot of people think they just took the plane out and flew it. No, they didn't. It took about 4 hours before they actually got this thing to do what they wanted it to do. It wouldn't go. And there are about 3 or 4 different planes made. So we're not sure which was the original one, but there is a replica of it at the Air and Space Museum, I saw. A beautiful-looking thing, but it's brand new. It's been remade.
Yeah.
It's not the original, but you get a feel of it when you get close to it.
And look, you know what? If you can have a flight on it, that'd be even more awesome.
Well, it would be. And it was when I saw the Hubble Telescope in Washington as well, at the Air and Space Museum, in a corner there, standing upright, a copy of it, not the original. Exact replica, size-wise and everything. It's big. It's not tiny. So it's not the same thing, though, as standing there. And then you go into another part of the complex, and there's the original Apollo capsules. These are the real ones that were actually there. I know bringing back the Hubble telescope is a bigger issue, but look, I just think these things should be contained. And future law, law should be enacted now, because we're now getting to the point where we've got contentious issues, we've got governments not trusting any. We're seeing a space race again develop with the same animosity as we saw with the Apollo mission.
That's right. And just with what's happening at the moment in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, I mean, this will escalate into something bigger. I mean, we have a potential for World War III. Let's face it, no one wants to use that terminology, but we are at the start of it now, David, and I never thought in our lifetime we'd see anything like it at all.
Well, we are, and you know, some years ago, Enrico Fermi, one of the people who was instrumental in the formation of the atom itself and building the bomb, and Oppenheimer and those, I was sitting around a table, and Enrico Fermi made the statement, well, where is everybody? You know, if there's so many planets out there, well, one of the theories that's come from that is quite interesting from what you just said. One of the theories maintains that perhaps there comes a point in every civilization where they reach a certain yes or no point, point of
no return.
where you get to the point where you have the power to destroy yourself. You either cross over that and get over that and continue on, or you annihilate yourself. Maybe this theory said maybe the reason we don't have many people around here, or we can't find life, and no one's visited us yet, maybe it's because of that that particular thing. And we're close to that now, aren't we?
Well, that's the scary thing, David, is that if, I mean, they start talking about nuclear weapons and what have you, you start using them here, then people will want to not just emigrate from the countries, but emigrate from the planet. I mean, the moon will be that stepping stone to get off. I mean, hell, could this be the thing that starts us into colonising the rest of space, destroying what we've got here?
We've got to be careful. Yeah, we've got a good future ahead of us, but we are now at the point, we're at the point in our civilization and our technology where we single-handedly have the power to destroy life, all life on this planet can be destroyed. And if we have a nuclear, no one wins a nuclear war. It's not even testable. You can't test it. But you've only got to look at what one hydrogen bomb can do to understand how devastating things would be. You couldn't live on this planet for 100 years. A hydrogen bomb, I talk about this stuff, you need an atomic bomb to fire a hydrogen bomb. And when you let off a hydrogen bomb, a H-bomb, they've got big ones now, large, huge yield ones. The heat core from that explosion, the heat core goes to 4 kilometres. Okay?
Yeah.
4 kilometres is everything is melted and vaporised in that corridor. Then there you go out to 10 kilometres. That's where you get almost total destruction. And that's one thermonuclear bomb.
Yeah, one. They've got how many?
The point, we've got to be careful here. And what you said scared me because a lot of people are thinking the same way. That could happen. Will it happen? I don't think so. What I hope will happen is the United Nations pull their finger out and do something about what's going on now. All of these nations, I don't get it, how one man can cause all of this drama going on without being deposed. Look what we did to Osama bin Laden and others like him, dictators like him. Mm. They were taken out before they could cause any more damage.
I've got to ask you too, I mean, the government's handing out money to this conflict, but they've announced $20 million to get a manufacturing hub in South Australia. At least we're looking forward to space here in Australia.
Well, it is. It's good. You know, yeah, building a space industry here is way overdue, and the government have committed $20 million to the development of what's called a space hub, a manufacturing hub in Adelaide. And it's going to be called the Australian Space Park, where they build a hyperfactory where they can build all sorts of things, you know. Adelaide Airport's been identified as the place they might build this on the location because it's pretty close to some of the traditional aerospace companies out there. Looking at 221 jobs being provided, that's good, and its partners involved with it, total people employed is well over 1,000. So it's a new industry here in Australia, and we're part of the space business. So 4 companies will locate in a purpose-built factory out there in the near future and with the production of small satellites and payloads for launch into space. We're fast becoming a global leader in space technology.
I just wish it was here in Queensland and not South Australia, David.
Well, it should have been up your way, in my opinion. You're closer to the equator. It's cheaper to launch that way. And you've got wide-open spaces as well. I'm not knocking Adelaide. Adelaide's got a lot going for it. But it's a lot further down. It is a traditional launch site, of course, with Woomera. But there seems to be too much focus to me in one area. I think it should be further out. A lot of people saying that too. The Queensland has got a lot more going for it. Normally, your weather is almost spot on.
Yeah, normally.
But your location up there close to the equator is a very, very interesting point, because that will get and command people from the Northern Hemisphere to come down here. It's not all that far for them to go.
Well, Hollywood comes down to Queensland, so why not the space industry?
Well, let's see how it all develops. But we are in there, and we're a partner now with a lot of nations. And as I say, it's a good thing about it is that we're there now. But we could have done this 4 decades ago, do you know?
Yeah, better late than never, David. Anyway, you can read more about that at davidrenicky.com. Before we go, David, maybe you can answer this. It's a question on your website from a reader. He's asking, how come I see fewer stars than I remember as a child? I mean, he's past 80, remembers the stars looking like they're almost on top of him, so close and so bright, and a billion of them, and now they look so far away and almost faint. Is that a legitimate question, or is his eyesight failing?
No, it is. A person's 80 years of age, and they're saying, look, as a kid, I remember the stars up there. You could reach out and touch them. They were so close and so bright. Mm. Have they moved away from us in that 80 years? And if so, how long before they won't be seen at all? What a good point. What we're referring to is sky pollution. It's the night skies now have increased dramatically over the past few decades. Almost every city is unlivable to an astronomer.
Yeah.
You can't put a telescope up in Brisbane, Melbourne, Adelaide, anywhere, Sydney.
Is that why they like you guys out of Whoop Whoop, not because you're crazy?
Well, that's why we go to Norfolk Island and places like that, where it's dark. First rule with a telescope is get away from the light. And do you know that, listen to this, it's estimated that 30% of the world population, 30%, can't see the Milky Way from their home. Now, it goes up to 80% if you live in some of the world's largest cities. I think it's terrible, and it's a blight on our society. Street lights, spotlights, building lights, all working together to cause this light pollution problem we've got. And you have a look next time when you're driving through one of your major towns up there and see how much light those buildings... Oh, they're left on all night, those buildings.
Brisbane's lit up like a bloody Vegas.
Here you go. You've got to get away from the lights. First rule, buy a telescope, go and get someone to show you how to use it, join an astronomy club, got a good one up there in Brisbane, and get away from the lights somewhere so you can enjoy the thing.
All right, so pollution is the cause of that, not failing eyesight for an 80-year-old. Good to know, David. I want to, before you go, people should have a look at your website about the Starlight Night Projectors from Galaxy. You've been testing them out?
Have we ever? This is a brilliant thing. You know, they've sent me one of these, and I don't normally do a product review, but this one got me. It was a little projector they sent to me, and it's an educational thing. I was knocked out by it. It's called a Galaxy Projector. Now, you plug it in, it's got a whole bunch of different programs inside, and it puts this, projects this image of stars and galaxies on the ceiling of your room.
Yeah, yeah.
What got me was it filled the entire room, and what really interested me was, you know, you could see it moving slowly, like you were lying there at night time, and the whole thing was just accelerated a little bit, and you could see this movement of the stars across the sky. I thought to myself while I lay there, I turned the lights out, and I thought, would this be enough to put someone to sleep if they were having a bit of trouble? Do you know what? 10 minutes later, I was gone. It was terrific. So this is on my website. If anyone wants to go and have a look at it, and you got young people, even yourself, you know, if you want something that's really cool to turn on, it's not dear, go and have a look at the projector. We've got the Starlight Projector, and I've done a review on it, and just see what you think. For any young person, it's brilliant to see this beautiful projection of galaxies and gas clouds and everything. It's one of the best I've seen, Bilko, and that's why I'm really impressed with it.
All right, check it out, davidrenicky.com. Till next week, David.